This unforced union between the work of the mind's eye and the craft of the hand, in Wienio and Ars, was, of course, the standard Renaissance ideal since at least Alberti's treatise on painting. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, episode 197, Rembrandt's Religious Reminder. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
Recently, I visited the Mauritshuis Museum in the Netherlands with wonderful friends. And after we entered the small and ornate edifice, I was accosted by one of the security guards, not with suspicion, but with warmth. The guard remembered the last time I had been to the museum and how engaged I was with a masterpiece by Rembrandt at the Mauritshuis, a depiction of David playing his harp for King Saul. It was quite nice, indeed moving, to be remembered as one enamored with Rembrandt's art and his art depicting biblical stories, and especially to be remembered in this way in the land where Rembrandt painted. This most recent visit to Mauritshuis afforded another source of inspiration, which, as I remarked to these aforementioned wonderful friends, would surely feature in an episode of 10-Minute Mitzvah. The painting that will provide us an artistic prism for our mitzvah of the day is not the artist's depiction of the two kings of Israel, but rather of Rembrandt's own contemporaries. It is a work in which he engaged soon upon coming to Amsterdam from his hometown of Leiden. Rembrandt shows us a doctor by the first name of Nicholas, who utilized an image of a tulip as a symbol for his practice, hence the title given to the painting, The Anatomy Lesson of Dr. Nicholas Tulp. In the painting, we see Dr. Tulp engaged in a dissection of the arm of a cadaver, as others look upon the entire event with enormous interest. Dr. Tulp, as many who have written about the painting note, is illustrating the inner aspects of the arm that allow for the movement of fingers. And as Simon Schama wrote, the movement of fingers is surely of enormous interest to an artist as well. Schama reflected upon this point when he recalled in an article seeing a different painting by Rembrandt, which we have also discussed in one of these podcasts, and that is Rembrandt's self-portrait with half circles, an image which strikingly and strangely features a hand on the artist himself that is unfinished. Schama describes seeing this painting as a young boy and questioning the artist's choice to his father. Quote, "But why," I asked my father, "hadn't he finished of all the details, that of his own pallid hand, the agent of all this wonder, a perverse refusal to picture the agency of picturing, so at odds with the perfectionist indication of an oily highlight on the tip of his big nose? Who knows," said Dad, "who indeed, but perhaps," Schama continues, "the steadiness of the gaze and the commotion of the brush, so ostensibly at odds with each other, are a calculated demonstration of the fit between mind and hand." And then Schama, utilizing Latin terms, writes as follows, quote, "This unforced union between the work of the mind's eye and the craft of the hand, in Wienio and Ars, was, of course, the standard Renaissance ideal since at least Alberti's treatise on painting. But what Rembrandt added was the drama of its translation into paint and etched line, a drama to which he shamelessly and repeatedly drew attention. What, after all, was his prodigy piece, The Anatomy Lesson of Dr. Nicholas Tulp, 1632, except a living meditation on dexterity, a treble epiphany? First, the indication of the dissected flexor muscles and tendons. Second, Tulp's demonstration of their action with his own hand. But thirdly, the painter's dramatization of the moment of learning amid a company of the astounded." End quote. This is indeed a fascinating point of analysis about the nature of the painting and why this commission would have been so interesting to Rembrandt. But the painting is interesting to us for another reason. For the mitzvah of the day that we will discuss relates to one who has been executed through capital punishment. And it happens to be that the cadaver that we see before Dr. Nicholas Tulp is, we know through the historical record, as has been discussed by many articles, a criminal that was just recently executed. Indeed, as I believe Simon Schama notes in his biography of Rembrandt, Rembrandt's Eyes, the artist might have been particularly interested in this man because, while put to death in Amsterdam, he hailed from Leiden, from which Rembrandt originated himself. It is about one that is executed by capital punishment that the Bible, in Deuteronomy speaks when it prohibits leaving the body of the one executed on public display overnight. Rather, the body must be buried. For the medieval work about the mitzvot, Sefer HaChinuch, the reason for this commandment is that public display of someone executed will lead to the festering of conversation about the crime, which at least in certain situations will lead to a desecration of God's name. In the Talmud, another explanation is cited by Rabbi Meir, a striking one, in which Rabbi Meir compares the human being created in the image of God to a twin of a king, the king here being the Almighty. If a twin of the king was a criminal, Rabbi Meir reflects, it would be discourteous to the king for the criminal to be on public display. Rabbi Meir's point is that human beings are, as Genesis describes them, B'Tselem Elohim, embodiments of the image of God. And though, of course, this stems from the fact that we are gifted with a spiritual soul, at the same time as Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik has emphasized in his writings, we reflect the fact that we are made in imago Dei, in God's image, when we engage in creative activity or reflect our capacity for creation. And that, of course, takes place in our material form here on earth, when body and soul are synthesized. This prohibition, in other words, is a reminder of the fact that human beings are God's work of art, and Rembrandt seems to be reminding us of that here as well. I believe Shama, in his book Rembrandt's Eyes, notes that Dr. Tulp seems to be speaking reverently, struck by the wonder that is the human arm, and therefore at the way in which God made human beings. Shama also notes that all those attending the lecture are arranged by Rembrandt in an arrow, pointing at the body that is under discussion. It is others, I believe, that take note of the fact that even though Rembrandt signed the painting toward the top of the canvas, if you look toward the navel, you will see that it is fashioned in the form of an R, a reminder to see the human form, the human body, and therefore the human being, as a work of art. On canvas, a work of art by the artist, but in reality, a work of art by God. All of the laws relating to burial in Jewish law are beyond the scope of this episode, and will perhaps be discussed soon in later podcasts in this 10-Minute Mitzvah series. For now, I reflect on this mitzvah utilizing Rembrandt's painting not because I believe the artist was connecting his depiction to this halachic legal subject, but rather because I was struck by hidden aspects of the work of art, which, like so many others by Rembrandt, can lead to greater wisdom. And for that, I have once again emerged from an encounter with his art very grateful. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.